Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. Unemployment is at its lowest level in decades. In fact, regions may be at full employment. But at the same time, many jobs are going unfilled because employers can't find skilled workers to find them, or to fill them, I should say. Construction, along with healthcare and personal care, will account for one-third of all new jobs through the year 2022. That's according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. There will also be a need for new plumbers and new electricians. And as politicians debate a massive overhaul of the nation's roads, bridges, and airports, the U.S. Department of Education reports that there will be a 68% more job openings in infrastructure-related fields in the next 5 years than there are people training to fill them. Skilled labor, the shortage, and education. That's what we're talking about on today's Smart Talk. Joining us on the program, Stephen Amberson, who is the Vice President of Student Affairs and Enrollment Management at Harrisburg Area Community College. Vic Rogers, HAC's Associate Provost of Workforce Development and Continuing Education. Michael DeGroft, Dean of Enrollment Services at Thaddeus Stevens College of Technology and Continuing Education, and Valerie Hatfield from the Lancaster Workforce Development Board. Welcome to all of you today.
Good morning. Good morning. Thanks for having us.
If you have a question or a comment, this is an important topic. Give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or comment on WITF's Facebook page, on Twitter. We are at Smart Talk WITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. I'm going to turn to Valerie Hatfield from Lancaster Workforce Development Board to begin the program and ask this question overall. You know, I have heard Ms. Hatfield on this program many times from employers who have said, we just cannot find enough skilled workers. What is the status? What are we looking at in Lancaster County that you focus on, but across the state?
Well, I think you hit some of the nail on the head with some of what you said. First of all, we've heard of the silver tsunami, which is more people are retiring than joining the workforce. 20% of our population in the county is ages 55 and up. And another up to 33%, 45 and up are going to be retiring here in the next 15 years. So that's leaving us a huge skills gap in the STEM fields, which is healthcare, construction, management, and those fields. So, and as you also said, we're at full employment. So we're looking at more jobs available than people. So who's our target audience for filling these positions? It's students, it's people in the reentry, so people who are released from prison. 1 in 3 people in our country have some kind of criminal background. It's English language learners, and it's upskilling people in their current positions. What I think is important is to know that education required for 80% of the jobs in our county require less than a 4-year degree. Mm-hmm. And that's where these gentlemen come into play.
And we're going to talk about those educational opportunities in just a minute. Age and retirement obviously is a big factor that so many people who hold these jobs now are retiring. But at the same time, we also know that, and one of the reasons you mentioned the students and the people that you're looking to fill those positions, that those openings do occur, that there are so many people that are not training for those kind of jobs. Why?
They have a lot of barriers to face. And I think they're not aware of all the opportunities that are out there.
Okay, some of the barriers when you were talking about those who have been released from prison, for example. But what are some of the other barriers? I mean, there are students who are young people who are just not choosing to follow these careers.
We were speaking in the room earlier, and we think a lot of that has to do with what has happened in the past as far as the push to put people in 4-year education and just the stigma that goes behind career and technical education and the uneducation of parents of the value of that education.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to turn to Michael DeGroft, who is the Dean of Enrollment Services at Thaddeus Stevens College of Technology. And Thaddeus Stevens has a national reputation. In fact, there was just something that was released a few weeks ago that cited Thaddeus Stevens as one of the best in the country at providing educations for people who are looking for, you know, skilled jobs where they need skills. So, first of all, let's kind of, I'll ask the same question. why are there so few, and I hate to make it sound like so few, like there's one or two, but not as many young people who are opting for these kind of careers?
I think it goes back several decades now that we've faced this issue where the big push has been four-year education. If you don't go to a four-year school, you're less than the person that goes to a four-year school. I think that high schools are now starting to realize that that's not always the case. They're focusing more on career and workplace awareness and what is out there. And their schools are starting to really educate the students on it's not always about where you should go to school. It's about what you want to do. So what is it that you want to do when you graduate from high school? Where do you want to be in 5-10 years? What kind of career is that? And then based on what career that is, okay, well, what major do I need to take to get that career? Then once you know what your major is, then okay, well, what schools offer that? Is it a 2-year education I need? Is it a 4-year? Is it maybe a 12-week certification advanced training that I need? And I think we're slowly getting there, but it's just been that long stigma of you have to go to a 4-year school to be successful, and it's further from the truth than it's ever been.
Well, let me just put it this way and add this, that for some people, some students, a 4-year degree, a bachelor's degree, is the way to go, depending on what your passion is,
sure,
what
absolutely.
You want to do.
Sure.
But it seems as though, as you said, getting over that stigma, it has been that many high schools, many guidance counselors, many parents don't direct their children toward these kind of jobs because, okay, well, I don't know, it sounds like a prestige thing. Like, you get your 4-year degree, you know, you can say you're a college graduate. But at the same time that you have students who are graduating and coming out and making $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 a year, right?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And the demand from industry right now is so strong that our students that are graduating, it's not where, you know, are they going to get a job? It's they're picking and choosing where they work. And in some cases, they're naming their price. The demand is that great out there in industry today. So, and I know, you know, Thaddeus Stevens isn't alone in that. There's several other schools that have the same thing, such as Hack.
Well, let's talk about Hack and Community College. I don't know, and just an observation, you tell me whether this is accurate or not. Used to be that many students would think about going to community college as their bridge to that 4-year college or university, that this is, you know, maybe I'm not ready for the 4-year school right off the bat. I'll go to Hack, I'll go to community college, and I'll do what I need to do, maybe get an associate's degree, but then I'll go on to the 4-year school. That still occurs. But community colleges today are much different in that Hack, other community colleges, are offering things that, well, I don't know, I'd say majors, but training in areas that do lead to these skilled jobs and maybe don't lead to a 4-year university, correct?
Absolutely true. And what I would say is, if I could even step back for a moment, you know, there are some structural things that we're seeing just, you know, nationwide. You know, because of the Great Recession that we went through, you know, you have a whole generation of students that are coming to us now who have watched their parents go to college, get a 4-year degree on the promise of having a job waiting for them, and then one wasn't. And so in that regard, we're seeing students start to change their perception around, well, community college is the 13th grade. No, it's not actually. It is one of the most economical and efficient ways you can get training and get out into the workforce and know that you're going to have an opportunity. And so everything from our workforce development, which Vic Rogers will be able to speak to in greater detail, up through our certificates, diplomas, we're providing training opportunities for students so that they can literally turn on a dime and get out into the workforce. Right now, it's sort of the best kept secret because of that mentality that says, well, you have to go to the 4-year to get a credential to be marketable. That's just not true anymore. Pedigree is less and less important today because of the great demand for that employers have for skilled labor. So you know, we're trying to help parents who have come up under a mindset that says, well, you have to go get that four-year degree. You know, we have to step back and remember what they were going through. When the economy's not doing well and there's fewer jobs, you have to differentiate yourself. And so go get that bachelor's degree. Oh, you got a bachelor's, you need to go get that master's. Well, we're in a situation now where there's so many jobs available and so few that can fill them. Literally, that mindset is old thinking.
But at the same time, Stephen, this is a college degree is part of the American dream.
Sure.
I mean, I was thinking back to even at the end of World War II with the GI Bill, that many of the people who came back from fighting the war, that they were given this benefit.
Yeah.
And many, many people who never would have even thought they had the opportunity to go to college. It was a prestige thing, and this is my way ahead.
Sure.
And over the years, things have changed. I mean, obviously, going back to 2008, you do want to set yourself apart.
Yeah.
I think a couple things here. This is not meant to bash four-year university colleges, because for some students, that is the way to go. But at the same time, not for everyone. So, Vic Rogers, let me ask you, workforce development, that is in your title. How long ago did that workforce development become part of what HAC did?
It's been a part of HAC's makeup, and I think what has happened, Scott, is recently we've seen a drive to increase that, to be more fluid, to be more nimble to what workforce needs are. So workforce development really is creative problem solving at its best. So we focus less on training and more on partnerships and collaboration with our manufacturing, our healthcare, our IT industries to find solutions to what their challenges are. So, you know, that's led us down the road of some really not exotic, but different thinking. Apprenticeships are really becoming the buzzword, and we've had an apprenticeship program now for almost a year and a half. In fact, we'll be celebrating our first graduation of an apprenticeship cohort through HAC through a partnership with Ames Reese in Lancaster County. They will have the first industrial manufacturing technician apprenticeships become journey workers in February of this year, so we're excited about that.
Explain what an apprenticeship looks like today, because those of us who are familiar with history, we know there were apprentices. This was the way that you became, I always think about like Ben Franklin, for example,
yes,
as an apprentice. You know, and I looked at my own family history and found people who served as apprentices. How does that work today?
Well, it's really a quantum leap from the old mindset of what an apprenticeship is. So it's not just the trades. We actually have an apprenticeship in Lancaster County, again, which is one of our greatest partners, with High Industries for High Hospitality. So a hospitality apprenticeship, which is brand new for the Commonwealth. What apprenticeships really look like is a dual training modality. So it's on-the-job learning, where competencies are signed off by experts who are in that field. And then there's technical training that's provided by the training institute, in this case, HAC, who give them one or two nights a week the technical background to be able to advance within that occupation. So we're really excited about it because, Scott, you mentioned it, and Valerie, you mentioned it, with the silver tsunami, we're losing them faster than we're gaining them, and we have to be able to have skilled workers to keep our economy going. So what we look at is that is a perfect blend of getting them in, getting them training and being productive right away while slowly transferring that skills for those outgoing folks who are going to go retire to Aruba or wherever they're going, but and they've earned that. So,
Michael DeGroff, I'm curious, you know, we've heard over the years that especially when an employer hires someone right out of college or right out of school, that it's one thing to learn in a classroom, it's another to have on-the-job training. Your students, how much on-the-job training do they get?
One of the great things about Thaddeus Stevens is our students, their schedule isn't a block schedule. So our plumbing students, for example, Monday through Friday, 4.5 hours a day, they are in our, what we call our shop, working hands-on stuff. We also send those students out into internships. For the class of 2018, 88% of our students had an internship while they were student Stevens. So for us, an internship is where they're taking their classes. When classes are over, they're going out and they're working for a company. Could be at High, it could be Warfel Company, it could be all these other great places. They're being paid to be an intern there. It's a win-win situation. The student gets to find out, is this a company I want to work for? The company gets to find out, is this somebody we want to hire when they graduate? A lot of times it does turn into full-time employment. So our students get that hands-on experience. We also build a house every year. So our students in masonry, plumbing, HVAC, carpentry, electrical, cabinet making, all those programs come together and as a group build a house from the ground up. You can't get better hands-on experience, real-life experience than that.
Just out of curiosity, quick answer, what's the average age of your student?
20 years old.
Same with you guys. I mean, at Hack, maybe, and I'm not talking about the overall mm-hmm. student population, but maybe mm-hmm. those who are involved in workforce development.
So 22.5 years age is our traditional age student, overall about 25.9% college-wide workforce development would probably be more of an adult.
It's about 27.
Okay. Yeah. So I was curious about that because I was wondering if there were people who, you know, they went into the workforce, they got some experience doing something else, decided, okay, this is the way we want to go. This is something I want to try. And I was curious. So that doesn't surprise me. That 20 to 27 years of age,
right.
That seems like when people are making decisions about their careers. We'll talk more about that in just a moment. Let's take a phone call from Kathy in York. Kathy, you're on the air.
Great. Thanks, Scott.
Yes, you're welcome.
I always enjoy the show. This is a great topic.
Thank you.
My first question really is about people who are in these fields. I'm going to give you an example, and there's a compliment for Stevens Tech. My example is a 50-year-old man who successfully completed what he has always considered a college degree at Stevens Tech in automotive technology and has been employed in the field ever since. And at this point, at age 50, his body is wearing out because these technical fields take a toll. So I'm wondering what thought's been given to finding training to keep people in the field, because of course at 50 he hesitates to go into another field because this is what he knows. But his body, his wrists, his shoulders, his arms are wearing down, and he knows if he stops to have surgery for any of these repairs, he's out of employment.
Thank you very much for your call. You know, that's something we probably don't think about. Not all jobs require physical labor, but a lot of these skilled jobs do. What about that? And, you know, the point that she brings up.
Well, you know, she brings up an excellent point. We know that it is labor intensive, many of the skilled trades. So we do the forethought of making sure they articulate to other educational opportunities later down the road. For example, I had mentioned apprenticeships. So a journey worker who has that four-year apprenticeship is given 30 college credits through our system. So they can become that manager or that next level supervisor that can take that skill set and articulate it into a leadership and a management opportunity. So that's really how we do that. We have really thought about career pathways, how you start from point A and get to point Z.
Stack all the credentials.
Right.
It's not just, okay, let's provide the education and they're out the door. You're thinking beyond that.
We have to, because it's an ever-evolving field. Technology is entering into it. So it's a continuing lifelong learning environment that we have to create now. So there is not, you have this and you're going to go now work for 30 years and good luck. It is, you have this, you're going to go into that career field. Technology is going to change that career field very rapidly, and we have to get you in the mindset of being able to come back, re-educate yourself, you know, get more fluent in that, in those technology changes that are happening, so that you can stay productive and the businesses and economy here in central Pennsylvania can stay productive.
But the point, okay, the example she used of a 50-year-old who has done had a career, he's done this, is should he be going back for retraining?
Absolutely. That the training that he has and the experience is invaluable. We would love someone like that to be an instructor for us, actually. We're shaking our heads saying, we need his name. But because we find that, too, our biggest challenge is finding the technically trained people to give the instruction. Mike, you see the same thing?
We see the same thing time over again. These people that are out in industry working that have this expertise that would be great to come back and teach, a lot of times they're making so much money out in industry, we can't match that. But
so you're actually competing too.
Absolutely.
Sometimes, yeah. But we, you know, we always encourage our students to kind of explore different opportunities as they get into their career path in a situation like that. And maybe retraining is the way to go. Maybe it is to look at becoming an instructor at a Hack or a Thaddeus Stevens.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk, and as you've been listening at all today, you realize that today is day one of WITF's fall fundraising campaign. I'm joined by WITF's Capital Bureau Chief, Katie Meyer. Katie, it's always good to see you.
Scott, likewise.
But you're here in a different capacity during today's Smart Talk.
Yes, I am, Scott. If you've been listening today at all, you heard me and Fred Vigent on the air asking you for money this morning. And we're still doing that. We're going to be doing that actually for the next week. And the reason we do that is because WITF and other public radio stations have an interesting funding model. Some may call it a counterintuitive funding model where we give you all this programming, all of our news, all of our national segments, all of our Smart Talk with Scott Lamar for free. It's all free for everybody. And then afterward, we ask if you are able for donations. And so, you know, it works out well for us. It really does, even if it seems like sort of a silly way to fund media. But where it comes down to is this time of year, we do this a couple times a year where we have to ask whatever you can afford to donate. If WITF is an important part of your life, we ask that you do that. Maybe, you know, $10 a month, $20 a month. Maybe you'd like to go for the, well, you know, dollar a day, $365 donation. Maybe you want to be a sustaining member. Maybe that's what works best for you. Whatever works for your lifestyle and for your wallet, that's what we're asking from WITF. And you can donate now by going to WITF.org or by calling us at 1-800-233-9483.
And it's very important, that last thing that Katie just said about the phone number.
Yes.
Because we have two different phone numbers, 800 numbers. The Smart Talk number, of course, is 1-800-729-7532. Mm. And if you would like to donate, of course, we do encourage you to go online. It's quick, it's easy,
yeah.
And it's kind of an in-and-out thing. But you know, Katie, this is the kind of conversation we're having today that we try to have every day on Smart Talk, that, you know, many people have kind of a set mindset of what the world looks like and what it should look like. And what we're talking about today is kind of goes against that, that, you know, we have such a low unemployment rate. There couldn't be jobs out there that are going unfilled. But yes, there are. And it just shows that, you know, we're trying to talk about all different aspects of our economy, the job market, you know, just so many things. And this kind of thing we do in Smart Talk every day.
Absolutely. And that's the kind of thing all of us here at WITF, whether we're reporters or we work, you know, maybe in the background on things, all of us really believe in the mission of this radio station and of public radio generally, which is we need measured discussion on complicated topics. We need context and we need nuance. And the great thing about public radio and about public media generally is this funding model allows us to do that. We can spend time on these like deep dives into, you know, tricky topics. We can do all of that because, you know, you guys seem to like it. You know, you the listener, and you support us when we do these things. And, you know, it works out. And that is why it is so important. You know, we only do this a couple of times a year, but that is why it is so important to support your local public radio station. And just think about, like, you know, where it fits into your life. Maybe you're on your way to work right now and you always tune into Smart Talk when you're on your way there. Maybe you work from home and this is part of your routine, maybe when you're like making your coffee. Maybe you're already at work and you're listening to it on your computer. However this fits into your daily schedule, wherever public radio, whatever it means to you as a person, whatever it does for your brain, all of that, you know, just think about what that is worth to you in dollars. Think about it. Is it worth the price of a cup of coffee? Is it worth, you know, and we go to the $10 a day, $20 a day, $30 a day or a month, whatever you want, however, whatever your resources are. We really appreciate any and all donations. That's the bottom line. So, again, if you want to donate, WITF.org. Or 1-800-233-9483.
Katie Meyer, I'll talk to you again in just a few minutes.
Oh, I'll be back.
All right, Katie, thanks. Welcome back to Smart Talk. We're talking about the skilled labor shortage in Pennsylvania and across the country and the educational opportunities that are out there. Our guest today, Stephen Ampersand, who is Harrisburg Area Community College's Vice President for Student Affairs and Enrollment Management. Vic Rogers, HACS Associate Provost of Workforce Development and Continuing Education. Michael DeGroff, Dean of Enrollment Services at Thaddeus Stevens College of Technology and Continuing Education. And Valerie Hatfield from the Lancaster Workforce Development Board. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or comment on WITF's Facebook page, on Twitter. We are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Before we take some more phone calls, Valerie, I wanted to ask you again, when you are talking to employers, and I'm sure the other three gentlemen, you do the same thing. But when you are talking to employers, what areas, what jobs in particular are right now, are, do they really say, these are some jobs that we need? We need skilled workers in these areas. What are they?
Well, the numbers show that there's definitely a gap in healthcare and manufacturing and the trades, and also leadership and management positions, because those are where people are retiring the most. But what we also hear from employers is, again, with how many, with the people today, is we just need people that are going to show up. We need people with soft skills. So that's something I think we all hear, and we are taking very seriously at the Workforce Board. We're actually developing a soft skills credential that we are hoping to get PA State recognized, so that all students going through K-12 have this foundation.
Soft skills, and you said it, Valerie, just, you know, a lot of people think about that. I think many of us take it for granted that when you start a job, you show up on time, you don't take days off, that, you know, there are a lot of things. Is this something that you mentioned that you're looking to do it on the high school level in the, you know, K-12, but in your institutions, is that something that has to be taught?
Well, we actually started what's called a STEP Academy a couple of years ago. We started hearing from businesses the same thing that Valerie noticed, that people weren't having the workplace competencies necessary to be a professional in any field. Time management, conflict resolution, how to work in teams. I mean, really, how to give a proper handshake. It really boiled down to that. So we created the STEP Academy, which is a 4-week model of giving people exposure to the culture of work, what it means to come back from a break on time, what it means to work in a team. And we started with a reentrant population, and it was very successful, so much so that we then started working in our high school populations. Right now, we have 12 school districts that we have a STEP Academy model embedded for those students who have decided, I'm not ready to go to college just yet. And that's what we try to tell parents when we have a workforce development discussion. It is not necessarily a failure if your child does not start out at a 4-year school, or whether they start out at school at all. The purpose of sending your child to a school is for career success, however that model fits. So what we look at is, when are you going to make that transition and do some college? It might not be right away. Some people aren't mature enough for that level of educational stress in their life. So we say, let's get you in a career path. And the STEP Academy really does that. We partner with manufacturers, we partner with healthcare institutions, because they want these young men and women. They're right out of high school, they're ready to go. Our reentrants that we've trained, and our adults who have barriers that Valerie mentioned. Knowing how to work or work ethic is not something that you are born with. It's something that you learn from experience. And we have less and less young men and women who have the opportunity to get that experience now. So giving them these professional skills are important.
Mike, how much time do you spend on this at Thaddeus Stevens, the soft skills?
echo everything that's been said. We've been hearing the same thing come back from our employers. We have a very comprehensive employer survey that we do to find out when our graduates are going out there, how happy are the employers with those graduates? What do we need to work on? Just yesterday, we actually had a craft advisory meeting where we bring industry in and they meet with our faculty to discuss that program specifically. And, you know, the soft skills topic came up again. And so they're looking to create like almost a mini committee within that to kind of address some of them. But what we are trying to do is embed it into our curriculum for all of our programs where it's just a regular occurrence. We expect that while you are a student. Some of our programs will actually make some of the students clock in, you know, like you would on a job. It's very much on our radar, and we are always addressing it and trying to make sure that once that student graduates and they get the job, that they're there on time. They're doing what's needed.
I want to take some phone calls. We have a lot of phone calls and emails here I want to get to in just a moment. Before I do, since we're talking about K-12 education, one of the suggestions that has been made, one of the ideas to get more students pursuing skilled jobs, skilled careers, is to make them aware of it much earlier than their junior year, their senior year in high school, going back as far as sixth or seventh grade, middle school, that young people and their parents are aware that this is an option. And you know, one of the things that I always want to point out, and I'm sure you do too, is that we're talking about good paying jobs here. That's right. I mean, this is not something where you're getting out and making minimum wage $10-$12 an hour. You're talking about people who are getting out of school making $50,000-$60,000 a year, maybe even more. So, Stephen, let me start with you about making younger people aware of these options earlier.
Yeah, so one of the things, we have several initiatives that we're doing at HAC to get people information sooner. So we're looking at everything from our college and high school dual enrollment programs where literally students can be enrolled in college, taking college level credit, and finishing up their high school. That helps to get them exposed to the institution. But we've also been crafting workshops. We do college prep workshops where we'll go out and we'll speak about what students need to do to prepare for, yes, a college career if they're going into college, but also talking about what options are available to them if they want to go directly into the workforce and talking about some of the credentials and things that are available to them. You know, the reality is, as the students that are available to us shrink, right, we know that because of the Great Recession, fewer children were had, and so that means there's fewer folks available for us to enroll. It becomes that much more important for us to get out into the community, talk to parents, talk to the young people, and plant the seed now so that they can start to take the steps they need to be ready to go either into our career technical programs or into our credit-bearing programs.
Let's take some phone calls. Pat is in Waynesboro. Pat, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I had the pleasure yesterday to, thank goodness, we've had the same plumbing outfit here in Waynesboro for probably 40 years. And the young man who came to reset our commode and was so personable and so nice, and I always ask them, where did you get your training? And invariably they will say, Franklin County Botech School. He said, why would I pay to have that, to get training, when I can go there, you know, from our high school and get the training I need? And I served on the board up there for a couple years, and I'm just a great believer in the VOTEC system, career system, yes.
All right. Thank you very much for your call. I'm sure you're happy to hear something like that. Sure. Let's take another call from Pam in Harrisburg. Pam, you're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you for a great show. I'm a firm believer in vocational ed. I graduated Denver Automotive many years ago. My point being, though, is that after I turned 50, it was getting harder and harder to find jobs. Now, I have not twisted a wrench professionally since the mid-70s. I actually got into auto parts. But in my mid-50s, I had a difficult time because everyone wanted a college degree. I couldn't get past the gatekeepers. Now that I'm 63, I don't have the physical strength to go in and twist a wrench. And with auto parts, either they don't pay or they want the college degree. The one thing which I have to commend is that credit towards college degree is a phenomenal, phenomenal bonus. I'm glad they're addressing that. But again, get into the vocational. It's fantastic. Even with my problems, I still highly recommend it. Thanks for a great show, and I'll be a subscribing member after I hang up.
All right. Well, we're glad to hear that. Thank you very much for your call. Again, this kind of relates to the other phone call that we did have. It shows that not everyone is the same, that not everyone is following that same career path. We do know, even though a lot of employers do value that experience, but there are also a lot of employers that say, well, you know, I am looking for younger workers, even though legally they're not supposed to do that. Mm-hmm. But we do know that that occurs. How do you get past the gatekeeper, as he said?
Well, I think it's a paradigm shift that is starting to happen, because that has been the norm, saying we want someone who is young, who's just got out of college, and with all those attributes. And what we're instead of seeing more and more, the need for a skilled workforce is trumping everything. If we're having people who are reentrants with some serious challenges that they face, who employers wouldn't look at them 5 years ago, are now saying, when will you have the next group ready to be interviewed? So that's a dynamic shift in the perceptions from the workforce, from the employers. They're the ones that are really driving this train. It is so hard to find workers now. We talked about our non-native English-speaking populations. We've got to create programs to get them up to speed. There is not a part of our community who wants to be engaged who we are not engaging right now to try to fill that gap, and it's still not enough.
You know, I have to say, though, that, yes, we are an economy right now that it's been a long time, if ever I've seen it in my lifetime, where, the unemployment rate is so low and employers are all but begging for employees out there, especially the skilled workers. But how long does that continue?
Great point. And if I could.
I try to make great points, Steve.
Excellent job. I got to tell you. Well, because it is cyclical. You know, we were talking earlier about how in the early 90s, IT was huge. And there was such a demand for folks who knew networks and routing and all these different aspects that they were literally plucking students out of their 6 to 9 month programs early and paying them big money. So, but what happened over time, more and more people got in there. It started to inflate how do we pick the right one? Hey, well, let's take this individual that has a bachelor's degree. Let's take this individual that has a master's degree. And so I believe the work that we're doing around stackable credentials, mm-hmm. giving people credit while they're learning these trades, it puts them in a position to, yes, get in and make a living wage, but also be in a position to ultimately vie for senior management and upper level positions as the market ebbs and flows.
Josette emails us and says, one of the problems my kids are having already is that many entry-level unskilled jobs require a bachelor's degree in anything, even to apply. Why do employers require this when most of those entry levels mean on-the-job training?
It's that old system that many employers unfortunately still utilize. And what I would say is there is so much value in trade and skilled training, and it's so available and inexpensive. So we had a conversation about an 18-year-old graduating in June, coming to get a 12-week CNC and machining training, and then starting out when everybody else is going back to school, they're starting employment in $50,000 a year jobs, not counting overtime. So I would say that to parents, look in a different direction if they are having those kinds of challenges. Often it needs just a little bit of certification, a little bit of training to get them in the door, because employers are willing to meet you halfway now.
And they'll pay. They'll pay for you to go back for retraining, and that's the other added benefit.
But the point that Josette brings up, and we know, granted, things have changed for how employers fill those jobs. They don't necessarily go to the help wanted ads in the newspaper any longer, but we still have seen job listings, whether it's online, mm-hmm. posted somewhere, that 4-year bachelor degree required or equivalent. Or equivalent. Is that where you come in with some of those kind of jobs?
It could be. It could be, you know, work experience, depending on if they've been out of high school, what they've been doing. I think that it just depends on the type of job sometimes, too. There's so many different 4-year degrees that are out there that don't have a true career path for that major. So there's that overwhelming graduates that are out there with this documentation, this paper, but there's no jobs in that field that they got. So I think that there's employers that when they're trying to fill positions, they want high credentials from the individuals coming in, even if it doesn't relate necessarily. It's more of a prestige thing for them sometimes. So that could be part of the problem.
Employers have to realize that things have changed too.
Yes.
All right. Rich says, I think a lot of the reason young folks, especially young men, choose to go to a 4-year college instead of secondary vocational education is that they are not yet done with sports. We know Stevens has a serious sports program, but none of the public community colleges do. You do, but we'll talk about that. I think a lot of guys would be satisfied with 2 more years of competition. If they excel, they might choose to transfer to a 4-year. Now, you know, I don't know the percentage who want to continue their athletic careers beyond high school, but we do know there are some. But it also brings up a wider question, and that is extracurricular activities. So if you would address what Rich says about young people who want to continue their athletic careers at and may not have the opportunities at a vocational school, and also those extracurricular activities so that they do get the college experience.
Sure. Well, HAC has a wonderful athletics program. You know, we have men's basketball, we have women's basketball, we have volleyball, we have golf. You know, the list goes on. You know, students can come from all of our campuses. We have 5 campuses, and we have 1 athletics program, and they can participate in, you know, our JUCO athletics programs. So they do have opportunities. The question, I think, is, you know, how does one, you know, balance the desire to compete in athletics and get the training they need to ultimately enter the workforce? And so it's about helping students to prioritize their needs. We can accommodate both. But, you know, I think there's a misperception that if I'm going to a community college then I don't get to do athletics. No, we've got actual programs, and we've got some, in many cases, we have some, I want to call it intermediate, but it's not, I can't quite call it a terminology. But what I want to say is that if students want to participate in athletics, it's available to them. My chief concern for folks is that, you know, if your goal is to get into the workforce, you can do that, but you've got to get prioritization. That means you need to get with an advisor who can help you to make those decisions.
Let me questions that we've had from phone callers. All of the industrial arts and trades have been taken away from school curriculum. I think he's talking about K-12. Mm-hmm. Boys or girls without a father in the family may not learn the mechanics of things. I think what he's saying is that the traditional wood shop, metal shop, mechanical drawing I had in junior high school, that a lot of these skills, many people, kids, young people, learn from their fathers. Doesn't mean that their mothers aren't teaching them some of those skills mm-hmm. now, but at the same time, the point being that they may not be getting seeing their parents doing a lot of these things. True?
I would say probably. I think we're in an era where it's more and more about convenience, and when you want something done at your home rather than doing it yourself, you get that, you know, person down the street that does it on the side to come in and do it, and you know, they don't see mom or dad, you know, doing the plumbing, doing some of the electrical work in a house. And
oh, I do the plumbing, just not very well.
we we have seen, I have begun to see a little bit of a shift in the K to 12, though, when it comes to that. It's, they got rid of all those things, and mm-hmm. we are seeing some schools starting to bring it back and implement some comprehensive programs in the high school and middle school to address those things. So it's, it was one of those things that when I was in high school, it was there, it went away, and we're slowly seeing it come back.
And Michael, you make a great point. We are working with, and Valerie, we're working with the manufacturers, a group of manufacturers in Lancaster. And one of the things that we're trying to do is expose young men and women to the opportunities that manufacturing has early, and then make platforms for them to be able to access that, meaning they can go in and do tours. We have manufacturing days. There is all these different modalities that we utilize to say, here is an opportunity that you might not be familiar with.
And well, something else, just with, can I interrupt for just a second, Steve, is that you mentioned manufacturing. Valerie mentioned manufacturing. You know, we hear so often manufacturing jobs are going away. They're going overseas. That doesn't mean they all have gone away.
That's right.
And it is a much different manufacturing setting than what it was 20 years ago, 30 years ago. In fact, you need those skills, right?
Manufacturing today is totally different than what most people think of. Most people think of manufacturing jobs dirty, hot, not fun employment. Today, we just are opening a brand new facility here in the next couple months. It is state-of-the-art, clean as you can imagine, where you're working in an advanced manufacturing center. So what it is today is totally different, and the demand is higher than it's ever been.
All right, so final question. There was so much that we could have covered. One final question for you. What has to happen to get more people in skilled careers, skilled labor careers, where the employers are able to fill those jobs?
Well, parents need to be a part of the equation. Parents make these decisions. We need to have really a robust discussion across Pennsylvania saying that it is no longer something that we can point at in terms of politicians fix this, high schools fix this, business people fix it. It's got to be a collaborative effort that we all get around the table and say, what resources can we bring to bear to make this a reality?
Valerie Hatfield is from the Lancaster Workforce Development Board. Michael DeGroff, Dean of Enrollment Services at Thaddeus Stevens College of Technology and Continuing Education. Vic Rogers, Harrisburg Area Community College Associate Provost of Workforce Development and Continuing Education. Stephen Ampersand, HACS Vice President of Student Affairs and Enrollment Management. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back. I was about to say welcome back to Smart Talk, but nope. The program is all but over. Katie Meyer, WITF's Capital Bureau Chief, joins us. Katie, WITF's first day of fall fundraising. It's an important time.
It's an important time. It really is. You know, this is, we only do this a couple times a year, and right now is the perfect time, if you're a listener to WITF, to show your support, to let us know how much of an impact we have on your daily life, on your daily routine, on your daily level of being informed. And if you find that, you know, we are, in fact, an important part of your life, then consider donating. Consider trying to translate that in your own mind into a dollar figure of how important we are. So if you think maybe you'd like to give us $10 a month, $20 a month, maybe you want to do a dollar a day, $365 a year, whatever works for you, it really helps us. And it goes a long way towards helping us, you know, continue to have programs that we do, like, for instance, Smart Talk. So if you want to donate, if you are interested in helping us out, go to WITF.org or call 1-800-233-9483.
And WITF, just in the last few weeks, and Katie has been very much involved in this, just started PA Post, which is a new news organization providing news from the state capitol. And as I said, Katie, is as our Capitol Bureau Chief, is so very important. The decisions made in Harrisburg affect everyone on a daily basis, and that's why it is so valuable that WITF has someone like Katie Meyer, other reporters, other journalists out there doing such a fantastic job reporting on this. Katie, it's just invaluable in about 20 seconds or less.
That's right. Yeah, no, it's truly, I think it's so important to have people there to, you know, bear witness to the people who make the policy that affects all of us here in Pennsylvania and to let you know what is happening. So if you think that's important, if you share our value on that topic, WITF.org or 1-800-233-9483.
Katie, I'll talk to you a little bit later.
All righty. Bye, Scott.
Coming up on Monday's program, talking about projects that are very important. We all know that Pennsylvania and the nation has an opioid crisis. Another project that involves collaboration of Pennsylvania's public media stations report on battling opioids. That's coming up on Monday.